Welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Matt Manicharian, former NFL scout and now of Sports Info Solutions, joined by Aaron Schatz, the godfather of football analytics and the founder of Football Outsiders. Watch out for the Football Outsiders Almanac, which is going to be out very soon. As always, we've got Justin Stein with us on the controls, and today we are doing a deep dive on Patrick Mahomes. He obviously got paid earlier in the week. We're going to break down the contract. We're going to break down the player. And we're really just going to dive in all things Mahomes today. So, Aaron, what's up? How you doing?
I'm doing well. Not as well as Patrick Mahomes, but I'm doing well.
It's hard to imagine many people doing as well as that. You'll hear the reports anywhere from 450 to 503 million. I guess it depends on the very unlikely to be earned incentives that would come into there. But either way, that's pretty good.
No, it's amazing. He's obviously the most, you know, the highest paid player. I think he's going to be the highest paid player for a while because the other quarterbacks that are coming up, they'll use this as a guideline, but I can't imagine Dak Prescott, if he goes to Dallas and says, I want more than Mahomes, they do have the right to say to him, you're not as good as Mahomes.
I think that's pretty clear. Although I do think it probably helps Dak a little bit.
Oh, it helps him. It helps him get more, but it doesn't help him get this much.
Right. He's not Mahomes. I don't think anybody would say that. I think, you know, that's a great segue to get right into it and start talking about the contract. Because for as much money as it is, I think you could definitely make the argument that this is a very team-friendly deal. In a lot of ways, it works for both parties. That's why it's a good deal on both sides of the equation. But the way that the contract really ends up working is that starting next year, the Chiefs have to decide if they want to guarantee 2 years ahead of time. And basically, that happens every year throughout the deal. So before 2021, they've got to decide if they're ready to guarantee 22 and 23. So it's a reasonable way to think of things. And I think the answer to do they want to guarantee that is going to be yes until Mahomes gets injured or you know, falls off the face of the earth or something like that, gets abducted by aliens, whatever it would take. But at the end of the day, it's the team interests in terms of, yeah, we'll guarantee you more money and more time in your career. The injury guarantee, I think, is a really big thing that they offered to Mahomes, saying even if you get injured and never play again, it's $140 million. And then on the other side of it, I think Mahomes is agreeing, yeah, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to play here until it goes. And then actually, I think at the end of the day, this probably ends up getting renegotiated and Mahomes ends up getting more money in the future. But really, I just think it ends up being a kind of win-win on both sides of the equation. I think it's very team-friendly. And I think all these other quarterbacks are still going to be looking at things in terms of the much shorter time horizon. You know, Russell Wilson's not going to be comfortable with this sort of an arrangement based on everything that we've seen. So I guess coming back, I'm agreeing with your point that it probably doesn't affect those quarterbacks too much.
If the cap continues to go up, and who knows what's going to happen in this post-COVID world, but if the cap continues to go up, when you get to the second half of this contract, he is going to be passed by other quarterbacks, and this is going to become really team-friendly, which is why you suggested it might get renegotiated. But from Mahomes' point of view, I think it's fair to say that maybe Patrick Mahomes just wanted to be set for life. Maybe he didn't want to have a short contract where he'd have to do it again in 3 years, and then what if he got injured or whatever. This sets him for life. Maybe he was like, all right, I'm set for life. I'm good.
Yeah, he seems like kind of just a reasonable person. And then if you think about the Chiefs' perspective, this just helps them plan for the next 10 years. And he's going to be the quarterback of those Chiefs for those years. So, of course, he would want to make it as friendly a situation for the team as possible to fit his contract in and give them the ability to plan for the future. This probably has positive ramifications on the Chris Jones situation because they didn't have to really leave their current cap situation at all in order to accomplish this deal. It's only going to affect them down the road from here. I think in terms of being a quarterback that wants to be paid and wants to be a part of a team where they can build around you, you know, for all of the conversation that we've had earlier about you definitely want to build around these first contract quarterbacks, and Mahomes is a great example of why you want to do that. But then at the same time, once you find Mahomes, I don't care that nobody with 20% of the cap has ever won the Super Bowl. I want Patrick Mahomes on my team. So you pay him, but then you also get this long-term situation, not so different from what Gruden got in Oakland, where by having the long-term stability kind of set in place ahead of time, you can make decisions around that that make it more palatable.
Yeah, and I've never been a big fan of the idea that no team where the quarterback takes up X percent of the salary cap has ever won the Super Bowl, because I think you've got to look not at like just those few teams that have won it all, but you have to look in general at successful teams. Like, what percentage of the cap do quarterbacks take on teams that win 11 or more games? What percentage of the cap do quarterbacks take on teams that make it to the Final Four? Because there is a good amount of randomness in who actually wins the Super Bowl. And if you look at those other measurements, teams with quarterbacks that take up a high percentage of the cap do fine.
I'm certainly agreeable to the argument that a great way to build a team is to have a rookie quarterback on a cheap contract.
Right.
I am also not going to be agreeable to say that that's the only way to build a team.
Nobody ever went broke paying the best player in the game.
Yeah, no doubt. So are you with me? Is this a team-friendly deal to you, or how do you look at it?
Yeah, I think it works out well for the Chiefs. I think it works out well for both sides. Everybody's happy.
All right, so let's get into the next question, which is Mahomes' big picture. What separates him from other quarterbacks?
I think simply it's he never has a bad game. And I realize it's only 2 years, so the bad games will happen at some point. But I don't remember ever seeing a quarterback that never had a bad game. His worst game by Football Outsiders stats was against the Chargers in week 17 of last year. He ended up coming out at minus 17 DYAR for that game. It was the first game he ever had where he came out below replacement level, and just barely. Like, he just doesn't have bad games.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a guy here with over 8 yards per attempt, 5-1 touchdown to interception ratio.
Look at splits, he does every split well, every down, pressure and not pressure. He comes out well, man and zone. He comes out at the top of the, like, he doesn't have any particular weaknesses, and he doesn't have particularly bad games. He's amazingly, consistently good.
And then I think over taking my analytics hat off and putting my scouting hat back on for a bit, even though, spoiler alert, they're really the same hat. When I look at it, I think about the critical factors for quarterbacks. So Patrick Mahomes, you look at his accuracy. I think in terms of accuracy, it's obvious what you see with Patrick Mahomes. He's a very accurate quarterback. The on-target percentage is way up there, as well as the completion percentage, no matter how you look at that. Then you look at the leadership, the ability to elevate his teammates, to elevate everybody around him. They had a pretty good quarterback there in Alex Smith, who had a very functional offense. He came and he elevated everything that they do. This is a quarterback that put the team on his back and won the end of the Super Bowl. So certainly he's got that leadership and clutch performance element to things. So really, when you look at what the most important traits for quarterbacks are, the third one being the decision making and the intelligence, you know, I don't know exactly where Andy Reid ends and Patrick Mahomes begins. And that's a question you could say the same thing about Sean Payton and Drew Brees, about Josh McDaniels and Tom Brady. To some extent, it's very difficult to tease out the offense from the quarterback, especially in terms of play calling and that sort of thing. But it's obvious that whatever Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are doing is working. You don't see a lot of mistakes in terms of interceptions on the film with him. You see a guy who keeps his eyes downfield. He likes to move to keep the play alive. And then in terms of some of the secondary traits that are icing on the cake when I talk about evaluating quarterbacks, you know, I need accuracy. I need decision-making. I need leadership. Arm strength is nice. Mahomes got all the arm strength in the world. Athleticism is nice. This is a really athletic quarterback who just doesn't even use it a lot of the time, how athletic he is. And then when you think about just some of the things that Mahomes does on top of anything like that, I've never seen people throwing no-look passes in games before. That's never been a thing. And this is, and he's a guy that's just absolutely changed it. So when you look at quarterback play going from these statues in the pocket that, oh no, we need guys that can move around. And then you look at the other side of the coin, which is, okay, we have these athletic quarterbacks, but you know, the old thought process goes that you can't win with one of those quarterbacks unless they can win inside the pocket. Well, here's Patrick Mahomes. He's literally got everything.
Yeah, I was going to say awareness and creativity on top of everything else, but he definitely checks all the boxes. He's been amazing.
All right, so let's look at things from a little bit of a different perspective. Is there a specific route type that Mahomes excels at that we wouldn't expect? Or is there something about his game that stood out to you as something that was just totally unexpected when you looked at him?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a route type that he didn't excel in last year, which will surprise people, which is screen passes, which actually makes him look better, right? Because Andy Reid is considered a great designer of screen passes. But this is probably a one-year blip. But the Chiefs were actually below average on screen passes last year. And that's a pass that doesn't usually show, it doesn't show much about the quarterback's ability. I mean, yes, there is a timing element that's important to screen pass and making sure that your receiver gets a lot of yards after the catch. But for the most part, that's a designed play, not one where the quarterback makes the play himself. And Mahomes put up big numbers without having the benefit of really good screen passes.
Yeah, you know, looking through and just kind of perusing the numbers, in addition to what you said before, there's really nowhere that he struggles on the field. But looking at things, I have, you know, from watching Mahomes and having the image of my mind, I think of him as somebody who likes to sling the ball down the field. I think of Tyreek Hill as being a big part of what the Chiefs do offensively and just all the speed that they have everywhere. But a couple of things. He was more dangerous on non-long passes than you would expect. So when we split passes out from behind the line, 1 to 10 yards, 11 to 20, or 21 and above, it's actually that long pass range where he was less efficient than the other ranges. And then the other thing that's kind of related to that is there's more yards after the catch than I expected when looking at Mahomes.
That hit in the league.
All air yards all over the place, but he had more yards after the catch than completed air yards last year. That really struck me. And then one more thing, much more over the middle than I expected. And then, you know, confirmation after the fact, okay, Kelce, it obviously makes a lot of sense that he's going to be doing a lot of work over the middle. But for a guy in my head where I'm thinking Mahomes is doing this stuff outside the hash marks, outside the numbers, down the field, it was a lot more short stuff over the middle and yards after contact than I certainly had in my mind before I looked into the statistics.
Nope. Again, if you look at all the routes, like there aren't any routes where the Chiefs really appear below average except screens last year. And screens were fine the year before. So again, this is just a guy where there has not been any weakness.
Well, let's get to a potential weakness. Where does Mahomes stand in terms of injury risk? I tried to look into this question. What were your thoughts on this one?
I don't think it's particularly strong. I think the knee injury that he had last year was kind of a fluke injury, and that, you know, it could really take happen to any quarterback in a quarterback sneak. He hasn't had any kind of nagging injuries, the kinds that last. So I don't think in terms of injury risk that he's, you know, below average in any way.
Yeah, so in terms of injury risk, you've said it, 2018 mostly unscathed, a few issues in 2019. But I think the thing about injury risk that's going to affect Mahomes is that, you know, he's so much better at a lot of aspects of the quarterback position that he can really control how much better he is. Unfortunately, he can't control the injury risk component as much as other things. When you did look at last year, he did have several different sorts of dings. There was the high ankle sprain that he got. He had one in week one, and then again in week five, it was re-aggravated. So that was something that bothered him early in the year. He had a rib cage thing early, taking a big hit. Then, of course, week seven, like you mentioned, that was the patella on his right knee that lingered throughout the year. And then late in the year against the Patriots, again, took a bad hit and had a hand thing, a bruise on his hand combined with a rib thing that both resulted from that week 14 game against the Patriots. So, again, didn't keep him out after that injury. But there were a couple of things that maybe it is as the season went on and people started to say, how do you beat Pat Mahomes? They said, you just got to hit this guy. And so we started taking some hits. So when I look at him and I look forward, where does he stand in terms of injury risk? To me, that's the only risk that I can find with Patrick Mahomes. And John Veros has done the research that in terms of a per-play basis, obviously we don't want our quarterbacks going out and getting hit all the time. But on a designed run or on a scramble where you end up carrying the ball, there's less injury risk than taking a hit when you're still trying to throw the ball down the field. And we know that Mahomes likes to kind of run to set up the throw, like we were talking about last week. And for that reason, I think it's a worry. If he exposes himself trying to keep his eyes down the field throughout the course of season after season, that is a way that eventually people are going to get injured. So I worry about that. But then, you know, coming full circle, yeah, the best predictor of injuries in the future is if being injured in the past. And this isn't a guy that's been injured a ton.
Yeah, I think some of those little injuries are the kind of little injuries every quarterback has during the season. It's the whole, you know, Tom Brady probable with the shoulder thing. His performance was fine.
Especially when every team that you play tries to figure out how to defend you, they don't have a good answer for it. And they say, okay, let's just try to hit the guy.
Yep.
Which brings us to our next question, which is, how would you try to defend Patrick Mahomes?
I do not know. In 2018, he was merely average against big blitzes, which are six or more guys. Okay, but then 2019 came, and he had no problems with them. So that's not a weakness. He was the best quarterback under pressure in 2018 and the second best quarterback under pressure in 2019. So even if you pressure him, he's going to be fine. The Chiefs kept him to a lot of the Chargers in that Week 17 game kept him to a lot of shorter passes with cover three. They played a lot of nickel even when the Chiefs were using 12 personnel. They mostly rushed four. So, I mean, I guess that starts to put together a little bit of a plan, which is, don't go to base defense, even if Kelsey isn't part of a two tight end set. You know, think of Kelsey more as a wide receiver. Get a pass rush with four, which the Chargers can do because they have Bosa and Ingram. Keep guys in front of you with the zone coverage so you can't have Tyreek Hill going for 80 yards. And you maybe get Mahomes to have a slightly below average game. I mean, there you go. There's my ideas.
Yeah, you know, I think you're getting there, which is the obvious two-part answer is, number one, there's not going to be a very good plan when you play this guy. And number two, the things that you try to do are limit the amount that he can hurt you. So you looked into it and you said, if you bring the pressure, it doesn't seem to be a very good strategy against Mahomes. He seems to play very well against that sort of a thing. So what I think about is the Peyton Manning Colts when they were just super dominant and taking the ball up and down the field against everybody. I think the blueprint against them became try to make it an 8-possession game, a 7-possession game, and just try to, when you have the ball, take all of the air out of the ball and just milk the clock as much as you can to limit the number of possessions that Mahomes is going to have. That can, you know, we saw Peyton, I thought that made him a little frustrated. It hurt the rhythm.
It's David theory, which is the idea that if you're the underdog, you want to limit the number of possessions so that you magnify the importance of random.
Hand in hand with that, I think the thing you do is what you were talking about, which is a really super bend but don't break style of game plan defensively. I think you want to do everything that you can to keep them in front of you, to keep them having to slog down the field 4 or 5 yards at a time. To even if they're running you over and you're getting beat up front, I agree. I think you stay in small personnel groupings. I think you stay in your zone coverage. I think a team like the Chargers that likes to play with small personnel and stay in zone and ridiculous amounts of the time and just be in that all day long. And I think that's the best thing that you can try to do against the Chiefs is force them to have these 10 play drives against you. Maybe they have a holding penalty that ends up getting them behind the sticks and you end up having something that comes positive out of it that way. Maybe they fumble the ball. If there's one weakness in Mahomes that we're talking about, maybe fumbles. He's had a few fumbles each of the last couple of years. So maybe you try to do that, but trying to lengthen the drives, I think both sides of the ball would be the way that I would go into it in terms of how I'd try to go about trying to play against him. You can run the ball every play against me, fine. I'm going to stay with my dime personnel, and I'm going to make sure we're taking care of Tyreek Hill over the top, and we'll take a slow bleed and maybe lose that way. But you're going to have a lot more chances, like you said, David theory, to end the game if you just keep giving Patrick Mahomes the ball.
I agree with you completely. I think, yeah, David theory, slow it down and try to bend but don't break. But it's tough. I mean, the other thing is, what was the greatest strategy always against Drew Brees and the Saints? It was to whip up on the defense. It was to just outscore Brees when they had a bad defense in New Orleans. So I guess part of the hope with Mahomes is that he takes up so much of the cap that their defense declines in the next couple of years and you can just outscore him.
Right. If they get, well, that's kind of where they were before this past season. If they were so bad defensively that they couldn't outscore their, you know, what they were doing offensively, then that's going to be another recipe for it.
Sports Info Solutions is excited to announce its Football Analytics Challenge. Contestants will use Sports Info Solutions data to determine which defensive line position is the most valuable and how does the value change based on factors like in-game situation. Registration is now open and submissions are due for preliminary judging by Sunday, July 19th. Three finalists will be chosen to present their work live to a panel of judges including Matt Manacharian, Aaron Schatz, and John Park from the Indianapolis Colts front office. In addition to some great exposure within the industry, winner will receive a free one-year subscription to the SIS Data Hub Pro and will be invited to appear on this podcast to discuss their research with Matt and Aaron. And the best part, all proceeds from the event will go to the United Negro College Fund. A minimum $1 donation is required for entry, but we encourage any of our listeners to donate to this worthy cause. For more information and to register today, check out the pinned tweet on the Sports Info Solutions Twitter account. That's @sportsinfo_SIS.
All right, where did you want to take it from here?
Let's talk about his teammates. Receiver-wise, he's got a ton of talent. Kelce is the best tight end in the league as a receiver right now. I think you've got a good argument for Kittle as the best tight end as a combined package, receiver and blocker, but Kelce's the best receiver. Certainly he's going to put up the biggest numbers. We have him ahead with a nice little gap between him and the rest of the tight ends in the Kubiak fantasy football projections, which, by the way, I will mention are now available on footballoutsiders.com if you're an FO Plus member. So people should come check out their fantasy projections for the year. Tyreek Hill, of course, is super ridiculously fast. Mecole Hardman is super ridiculously fast. Probably has a ton of upside because, like, as a fantasy guy, because, you know, God forbid Tyreek Hill ever got hurt, suddenly you put Mecole Hardman in that role, he's probably doing the same things. He plays with really good receivers, which is obviously a help.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at something interesting. John Shirley from our research team, he put together an interesting on-off splits application where through the Data Hub, you can kind of look through and see with a player on the field versus off the field, what the team's tendencies were, how well they performed with and without him on the field. Obviously, you know, the Chiefs were much better with Mahomes on the field than with Matt Moore on the field. I think that you don't need the app to look into that. But when you look into the specific receivers who performed better or worse over the times where you had one or the other quarterback playing this year, it was Travis Kelce who really reaped the most benefit from Mahomes being out there. It was 10 yards per target with Mahomes, 0.46 EPA per target, and just 0.15 with Matt Moore, and 6 yards per target there. So I think that when Mahomes was out, there was a lot of ability for defenses to really hone in on Kelce and being, you know, really focusing on stopping him and having the offense stop from there. So that was one thing that I thought was interesting to look at. When you looked in terms of, you know, pretty much every receiver performs well with Mahomes on the field. It's not shocking there. Mecole Hardman was very efficient, regardless of who was throwing him the ball. Didn't get much action during the other weeks of the year when Mahomes was out. But, you know, Tyreek Hill was very good regardless of who was the quarterback. He had a lot of success either way. In fact, more yards per target from Matt Moore than from Patrick Mahomes, interestingly enough. But then DeMarcus Robinson, Sammy Watkins, these guys are just much, much better. They go from being average, below average receivers with the backup quarterback to being guys that are getting more than 0.2 of an expected point per target, each of them. So just more ways that you can break down all the different aspects of how good Mahomes is. As I mentioned before, the on-off team performance, it's 0.24 EPA per play on pass plays with Mahomes on the field, just 0.04 per play with him off the field. So 0.2 of an expected points added period on pass plays just from Mahomes being out there. And actually their rushing got worse for the weeks that he was out. So I don't think that has anything to do with him either way, but it just goes to show you you know, per 60 plays, it's two touchdowns a game that Mahomes is worth.
Now, here's a question for you, which is, what do you think of the offensive line?
You know, I think that's an interesting question. I thought that the Chiefs' offensive line performed pretty well last year, but overall, I actually think they're a line that gets probably more love than they deserve nationally.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. If you look at pressure rates, look, obviously quarterbacks play a role in sack rate and pressure rate. But sack rate-wise, adjusted sack rate, they've been a top five team for 2 years. Pressure rate, 26th last year, 24th the year before. When you talk about run blocking, which obviously doesn't have to do with Mahomes, but they were only 28th in adjusted line yards last year. And here's the other thing about Kansas City, which is the SIS charting charts them with a lot of blown blocks, like a lot of blown blocks. They were fourth in blown blocks on passes last year. And a lot of that is Cameron Irving, which is not a shock, but a lot of it is a shock. Mitchell Schwartz gets charted with a lot of blown blocks. And this has been two straight years. And I hate saying bad things about him because he's one of the few players that actually follows our work. But I went and looked at a lot of them and they were all, none of them were like a stretch. Like he gets beat. He seems to be a tackle who has very high highs, but also has some occasional lows. Like he'll get beat and then he'll just dominate for a few snaps.
Right. Yeah. He's not a super duper athletic guy. So what you're saying, I think jives with me. Coming back to Cam Irving, you know, the real problem, we do a statistic that we call adjusted blown block rate. So this is not just the number of blown blocks that you have, but, and it's also not just blown blocks per play. It's adjusted for who you faced. So if you're a left tackle, not only is it adjusted for your position, but it's adjusted for the defensive ends that you were going up against in those specific games and how likely those guys are to force blown blocks against them. So there's an iterative process here. And Cam Irving, his adjusted blown block rate is up at 8.8%. The next highest on the Chiefs was Mitchell Schwartz at 4.3%. But you're talking about more than doubling that adjusted blown block rate. It's absolutely ridiculous there. You know, Schwartz and Fisher, right, both there, right around the 4% range right there. And then you see Austin Ryder had a very good season, the adjusted blown block rate below 1%.
That's the center for people who don't know. And at least Irving is gone now, right? Mike Remmers is now their backup swing tackle. So that's an improvement.
But yeah, I don't think people really realized Mahomes does a great job of suppressing the number of times that he gets pressured and that he gets sacked relative to the amount of times that the Chiefs are giving up blown blocks. So I do agree with kind of your perspective there that this is a team that I don't know if he helps just make up for what they do up front, and that's where it comes from up there, or how you want to frame it. But I do think that it's fair to criticize that offensive line a little bit more than they are nationally. I think nationally they get a lot of love, and I think that they're more middle of the road than people seem to discuss them as.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
All right, and then moving forward, Mahomes told the Chiefs he wanted Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the draft. At least that's the story that you hear. They took him at the end of the first round. I wrote out CEH in the SIS Football Rookie Handbook. And interestingly, I think he's a guy that obviously brings a lot to the passing game in terms of what he can do as a receiver. This is a guy that, with him being on the field, again, we're causing more problems for the defense because, like we said before, if defensively we want to approach the Chiefs and say, we'll let you run against us, we just want to keep all these defensive backs on the field and play off of you there. Well, having Clyde Edwards-Helaire out there is somebody who can run in between the tackles, who can run outside the tackles, who can be a good player in that role, and he can also split outside and be used as a receiver. So, you know, if you do want to put a linebacker on the field to deal with him, I think he's going to cause a lot of problems for you in the passing game. And then if you can get the linebackers off the field, and like I was saying before, I think I would approach the Chiefs by saying, we're going to play a lot of defensive backs and try to keep everything in front of us. Then somebody like Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a little bit of a bowling ball, and is for a small guy, he's a little bit better of a broken tackle type runner somebody that can not just be elusive, but can also kind of fall forward through contact and have that little bowling ball MJD type style to him. I think that could be a big impact for them. If teams end up just playing off of them and saying, you're going to have to run to beat us, the Chiefs might have a guy there where they can say, okay, we're going to make you regret that.
Yeah, although again, that adjusted line yards suggests that he may not get the blocking to fully like dominate. But it's interesting, he does badly in our backcast projection system, but the one thing that's really missing from backcast, because it's built on a lot of years and we only have charting for a few years, is it's missing broken tackles. And so it's notoriously has underrated players who have high broken tackle rates, and CEH has a really high broken tackle rate. So, you know, I mean, it's interesting. There's a good debate here about how important he's going to be, given the research that's shown that, you know, planned passes to running backs just don't get the efficiency as planned passes to wide receivers or tight ends. But that he does create another weapon that defenses have to defend again. And I'm with you. I think it's just another reason why you want to go nickel and dime against the Chiefs, even if they're in 12 personnel or even 21 personnel with Anthony Sherman at fullback, because you want to put a defensive back on him if he goes out for a route.
And then honestly, when if you do put a defensive back on him, I don't think he scares defensive backs as a receiver. He's not a guy with a great catch radius. You know, I will poke some of the holes in him. Backcast doesn't like him because he's quicker than fast. He's not a fast 40 speed guy, and he's not a guy that weighs a whole lot. So in terms of, you know, just being a size speed guy, that's not what he's bringing to the table. He's quicker than fast. He's a really good zone scheme runner. So I think he'll fit in with what the Chiefs want to do there a good amount of the time. But in terms of as a receiver, he can separate, but not a great catch radius, not somebody with receiver type of hands that you really, you know, think about going down the hill, down the field like that. And then the biggest hole in his game is this guy is a terrible pass protector. We see lots of bad pass protectors come out of college all the time. And yeah, if your plan is that you're going to be using him, you're going to think about splitting him out, that's all fine and well, but from an inside football perspective, you're dictating something to the defense. As soon as you put him on the field, they know that he cannot be a part of your protection package or an effective part of your protection package. So that allows the defense to have a little bit of an advantage in the sort of chess game of knowing on, you know, for all the things Edwards-Helaire brings in terms of versatility, that's one aspect of versatility that he doesn't have that I think defenses can look to attack around that.
Maybe that's a reason to play more Sherman or whoever's the second tight end, which I'm not sure. Ricky Seals-Jones is not really a blocker. They're sort of the one weakness on the Chiefs roster right now might be who that second tight end is going to be when they want to go to two tight ends.
Before we get out of here, I wanted to ask one more question to you. In your opinion, Mahomes' stardom, this contract, everything else that goes along with Patrick Mahomes, does this mean anything beyond his performance on the field? Where do you see Mahomes in terms of kind of being bigger than football in certain ways?
Yeah, this is actually where his player comment in Football Outsiders Almanac goes, written by Mike Tanier, talking about he's really a trailblazer as far as just being an ordinary guy. Like Brady had and Russell Wilson had this whole half of a celebrity power couple approach, and older quarterbacks like Manning and Breeze were really before social media, and other quarterbacks are kind of weird, like Cam Newton, and Mahomes just comes across as a good guy who understands social media, can converse with teammates and fans about non-football topics. It was really important that he was the first player on the viral video with the Black Lives Matter. He's relatable. It's really positive. He's a positive influence on younger fans engaging the NFL. So he is like a really great guy to have as the face of the league. Except for his obsession with ketchup, which I just don't.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but what I do know is that when I close my eyes and listen to his voice, I hear Kermit the Frog, and he is wonderful. So, Justin, I don't know.
Kermit the Frog is also relatable, by the way.
Yeah, it's not easy. I guess it is easy being Patrick Mahomes these days. But yeah, Justin, before we sign off, if you could get us just a little taste of that Mahomes voice, so that we can just hear a soundbite of him and close our eyes and think about how lucky we are to have him. I think the listeners would appreciate that.
Yeah, I have. I've heard it since I was in like seventh grade. So, but it's something that I've kind of embraced. And the guys, Kelsey, Tyreek, and those guys throw some shots at me, but don't worry, I throw shots back.
Thank you for listening, and be sure to check out the SIS Football Analytics Challenge for the United Negro College Fund. You can find it through sportsinfosolutions.com or our Twitter at sportsinfo_SIS. Again, it's a great way for the public football analytics community to get their hands on some new and interesting data. Defensive line techniques are out there for everybody. And even if you aren't interested in competing, you can donate to a great cause through our GoFundMe page. And I just want to take a minute to thank everybody who has donated. It's been really unbelievable to see all the support that we've gotten in addition to lots of good entries that appear to be on the way. So we're really excited for the actual contest. Aaron will be there helping judge, along with me, along with John Park from the Indianapolis Colts. And we're just really excited that this is all going towards a good cause and helping the whole football analytics community get some new data out there into the world.
And hopefully discover some cool new analysts.
Sports Info Solutions, good segue, Aaron, is also recruiting 2020 football video scouts. If you're interested in applying, head to the careers section of our website, sportsinfosolutions.com. And of course, the Football Outsiders Almanac will be out this month. Aaron, we are
next week.
Next week.
T-minus 6 days right now. So for people who don't know, Football Outsiders Almanac 2020 should be out, hopefully, next Wednesday. That's what we're shooting for. Kubiak Fantasy Projections are already available on our site as part of an FO Plus subscription. And we're running an FO Plus Early Bird Special, more than 30% off the cost of either the Almanac or the full FO Plus subscription. So people should come to footballoutsiders.com and check that out.
Don't miss it. Football Outsiders Almanac is absolute must reading every single season for any football fan out there. For my co-host, Aaron Schatz, our producer, Justin Stein, I'm Matt Manicharian, and thank you for joining us for the latest episode of the Off the Charts Football Podcast.